Welcome to the Coffee with Karen podcast, a weekly chat show discussing everything from holistic health to current affairs from a mental, physical, and spiritual perspective. Get your weekly cup of positivity with a sprinkling of woo-woo.
And welcome. So we are live. So Coffee with Karen, a cup of positivity with just a sprinkling of woo-woo. So this show, each week, my guests tend to be in the coaching arena, healing arena, therapy arena, whether that's helping people from a mental, a physical, or a spiritual perspective, or what tends to happen is some kind of combination of the above three. So I'm your host. My name's Karen Roberts. I do come from a very physical background. Personal trainer, fitness industry for 25 years, sports therapist for 27 years, but no longer. Although I am a huge advocate for the ketogenic diet and fasting, so I still have a passion for the health side of things. I have gone slightly more woo-woo. And now my focus is actually really helping other coaches, healers, therapists in expanding their reach, really growing their audience, building influence within that audience so that they can actually be paid their worth. Because what I have found is that they tend to be natural givers and not so good maybe at receiving. So today's guest, I'm going to allow him to let you know what category to put him in. On the face of it, it's very physical. There's definitely a bit of mental in there. And I'm not sure about the woo-woo, so I'll allow him to share. So, Lee, if you could share with the listeners a little bit about who you are, what you do, and share a bit of your story, please.
Sure. Well, the story goes back a long time, so I won't go all the way back. But suffice to say, in the mid-1990s, I was in an office job. I was well-paid. It was stress-free. I was in my mid-20s. I had my own home. I had a sports car. I had enough money to go out clubbing at weekends, which is really my main priority when I was in my mid-20s. Could go on holidays to Ibiza every year. And you'd think life was great. And it was. But I used to wake up every day and think, oh, I've got to go to work. And I didn't even dislike my job. I quite liked it. I was working a combination of kind of architecture slash IT type work, which I enjoyed. But I used to wake up every day and think, there's got to be more to life than this. And at the time, so we're talking the mid-90s, I was training at a gym. And it was the first time I'd come across something called a personal trainer. So this was about 94, 95. You know, when I was at school, because I had a very physical, athletic background, I kind of thought, with any job I kind of looked like I would enjoy would be a PE teacher. But they don't earn any money, so I'm not going to do that. But then I'm seeing these couple of guys working in this gym. They look like they're having a lot of fun. And, you know, I mean, I was almost living in gyms in those days. And I thought, that's interesting. And I was sitting down, actually had dinner with them one night after my workout, and they were talking to me and they said, how do you know all this stuff about fitness? And I said, well, I'm the kind of guy that when I do something, I do it properly. I do it 100% or I don't bother doing it at all. And they're like, but you know as much as we do and we've got sports science degrees. Like, how have you learned all this stuff? And I said, I just love to read. So that was kind of a light bulb moment when they said, well, why don't you do what we do? And that was like, oh my God, I can get paid for being in a gym and helping people to get fit. And really that was the start of my journey. And I said to them, you know, what's the best organization to train with? Because I always go to the best people to get my education from it, in whichever area it is. So I initially trained with the American College of Sports Medicine. And in 96, I started working as a personal trainer. I spent a year in Australia. I worked out there for a year, came back in 98. And then I worked in various different positions. Some were self-employed, some for a health club chain. But it got to 2001 and I kept thinking, I keep getting people that are coming to me that are injured, but I don't really know what to do with them. And interestingly, I've been reading for many years from a guy called Paul Check, who I'm sure you've heard of. And he started running courses in the UK. And I thought, oh my God, I've got to do a course with this guy because he is like, you know, he's just so different to everyone else. And, you know, for people watching or listening to this, if you know what a Swiss ball is, if you've heard of functional training or you know what a cable machine is, it's all because of Paul Cech. He was the guy that brought those into the fitness industry.
And he was very controversial.
And he still is. And he still is. Not so much on the exercise front, but on, well, let's call it Woo-Woo's side of it. But anyway, so I looked at the courses and thought, oh, they look amazing. And I looked at the price and thought, oh, not so amazing, because they were extremely expensive. But in the end, I bit the bullet and I started my journey, which took 5.5 years of training, both in the UK, a little bit in Denmark, and the last couple of years in San Diego in California.
Wow.
And during that time, I was studying other things as well. But the first course I ever did, which was in London, it was a 9-day course and it was on spinal pathology. And it was 9 days that just blew my brains out, first of all. It was so technical, you know, it was just so in depth. But what I was finding very quickly after that course, people were coming to me that had lower back problems. And now I've never really worked with them before because I just didn't know what to do with them. And they were saying, well, I've seen this consultant, you know, orthopedic surgeon in Harley Street, and they don't know what to do with me. And I was like, okay, well, let me just try what I've been learning and see what happens. And what was happening was these people were getting better very quickly. And I was thinking, wow, this stuff that I've learned is amazing. And there's one particular story I remember of one lady who came to see me, and she'd had back pain for years. And she was probably middle-aged at the time. And she joined the health club that I was employed by at the time. And the club manager said, I'm only going to let you join the club if you do personal training with Lee, because I don't think it's safe for you to do otherwise. And she said, okay, fine, I'll do it. Well, I'd been training with her for 4 weeks and she disappeared. So I went into the office staff and said, look, can you chase her up? I'm really worried about her, you know? And anyway, forgot about her. And about a month later, the office staff came to me and they said, oh, you know, this lady, she said, we finally got hold of her. And I was like, okay, well, how is she? She's great. She's gone on a dance tour. That's why you haven't seen her. And I was like, wow, that is amazing. She hadn't worked as a dancer for years because of her back pain.
Wow.
So that was kind of the start of the journey, really. And then over the years, I've studied many other things. You know, nutrition. I started my studies with American College of Sports Medicine. I've studied metabolic typing, which is all about finding out what foods are right for the individual. So, you know, not one diet is good for everyone. I've studied functional diagnostic nutrition, which is a form of functional medicine. I've studied manual therapies, so sports massage therapy. I've also studied active release techniques. Part of the Cech system, as well as the physical side, which we call integrated movement science. There's also another side to it called holistic lifestyle coaching, which involves nutrition and lifestyle. And you know, it goes into a lot of different areas, some of it woo-woo. And so what I've done is I've taken all of my training, and there's other things that, you know, I'm not even going to go. There's been a lot of other things I've trained in as well. But what I've basically done is taken all the training that I've done over the years, which costs well over £100,000, and put it together as a holistic system. So I don't look at a person as a lower back injury or a shoulder injury or whatever it might be. I look at them as a whole being and say, right, okay, what has caused your problem? Let's deal with the cause. Because what we see a lot today, unfortunately, is someone gets an injury or an illness, and the choices they're often given is just, well, let's get rid of the symptoms. Let's not worry about what's caused it in the first place.
It's unfortunate that it is the instinctive choice for a lot of people to go to a doctor when they have back pain. And you're thinking, bless them, I'm not putting doctors down here, please don't take this the wrong way. We know that they don't study nutrition as a starter. And what do they know about injuries? They just are not qualified for that. So all they get given is ibuprofen, paracetamol, and get told to rest, which may or may not be the worst bit of advice as well. So it seems such a shame that this isn't, you know, the holistic approach. It just And I love it because everybody that really is coming on here is taking this approach because it is what it is. And you say about the woo-woo, at the end of the day, it's all woo-woo. It's just dressed up in the mental and physical, right?
Well, I think a lot of people call something woo-woo because they don't understand it. Or because it's something that we don't yet have the scientific technology to measure.
Ah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, we're getting there. I mean, it's not that long ago when they totally dissed things like shiatsu or acupuncture. They didn't understand meridian lines until all of a sudden they had a machine that could sense that it was there, but they still didn't understand it. But at least it proved, because they are always looking for this visual proof that it is there, but you know they can't cut a leg in half and see, because
well, Paul Check has a great saying, and he said, "You can cut open the dancer, but you won't see the dance."
Brilliant. Right?
And another example that you know he often uses is that you know he'll be challenged by someone, you know, again accusing him of being woo woo, and him saying, "Well, do you not believe what I'm saying because you can't measure it?" And they're like, "Well, yeah." I say, "Okay, do you love your wife?" I'm like, "Well, yeah." Okay, how do you measure love? Right?
Good point.
So, you know, for me, all woo-woo is something that we don't yet have the technology to measure.
Yeah.
That's all
it does. I know personally that I never studied any of this, but our muscle energy technique, actually, I know you know her, Christine, I suffered with post-giving birth, I suppose, sacroiliac issues that I would go and see, you know, an osteopath or a chiropractor to be realigned. And she taught me a fantastic, very easy, simple muscle energy technique that I still use today. If I think, oh, yeah, I can tell when I'm slightly out of, I'm so highly tuned that I know when I'm slightly out, and I can just lie on my back, do this very gentle, you know, exercise, if you call it exercise, it's like a non-exercise
Don Signy maneuver. It's a Don Signy maneuver.
Unbelievable. So yeah. I know it well. And I suppose there you go. The proof is in the pudding. So when you have a client like that who hasn't danced for years and goes on a dance tour, that the proof is in the pudding.
Exactly.
And I know it works.
Yeah.
Awesome. So you switched from a highly paid, and from what you've just shared there, it's not your typical job. I would have thought that you were probably not very easily replaced because it's not something.
Yeah, they had to replace me with someone that they had to pay four times the salary they were paying me.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what do you think was really the trigger there? Because it does sound like you were really in tune with what you're, you know, very heart-centered as to what you're, I don't know, we call it purpose, whatever your calling is. So, I mean, how long ago did that actually, when you finally actually doing what you personally loved, how long ago was that?
So 1996. So right. What's
so
that?
You've 20, been doing it a very 20, long time.
26 years ago is when I kind of made that, well, I had that light bulb moment. And what's interesting, because I'm just about to launch my own podcast, actually.
Yay!
And it's called The Radical Health Rebel. And I've called it that because a lot of the things that we, or the general public consider radical or rebellious, are the things that actually we need to do to be healthy.
100%.
And all they are is getting into alignment with nature, because we've got so far away from that. But what I was doing when I was looking back, when I was kind of preparing my podcast, was, you know, how did I get to where I am now? And what was quite interesting was, and again, the word rebel kept coming up when I looked back at my past, not in a bad way, but what I found was when I was employed, if there was a boss that would try and kind of, you know, boss me around, I would just rebel against them. If I had a boss that was like, okay, Lee, you know what you're doing. You're good at what you do. Get on with it. If you need my help, you know where I am. Then I would flourish. So what I think in 1996, I think what happened was, it was one of the first times when I look back and think I was really tuning into my intuition. That's really what I felt I was able to do. And what's interesting, having coached clients for 26 years, is that it's amazing how many people still don't know what it is they came here to do. Right.
Yeah.
And
well, we've been conditioned, haven't we, through schooling to go through life with these certain milestones. You know, you go and get your qualifications, then you've got to go to uni, get your degree, then you've got to, you know, if you meet someone, you've got to buy a house, and then you get engaged and you get married and then you have children. And there's all these miles, your life has been mapped out rather than, I mean, the whole school system is totally against going with your intuition. It's just, it's we're dealing with the ego mind, the mind, learn just this thought stuff, learning stuff, rather than actually trusting. And it's interesting you say that, intuition. I mean, I totally agree. We've come away from that so much so that we've almost been conditioned to not trust your intuition.
Yeah. Yeah. So because it's woo woo, right? It's woo woo.
Yeah.
Because how do you measure your intuition?
Yeah.
Right. I measure it because, like you mentioned, in some of the cases I work with, I can look back and say, wow, my intuition was right. You know,
every time. I think it will always be. If you look back every time.
If it's not. So I think sometimes where the challenge can be is, are you hearing your intuition or your ego? That's the challenge.
There you said it.
And quite often when I look back, that's where you can tell the difference.
100%.
Because your intuition will get it right. Even if, you know, sometimes you look back and you think, okay, the intuition took me down that path, but that was a challenge. And that's because you needed the challenge. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So one example. So in 2013, so by that point, I'd been helping people with lower back pain for 12 years, very successfully. And in 2013, I taught a course for the Czech Institute. So it's 5 days. And during the last couple of days, because you're standing all day, I was thinking, oh, my, funny enough, sacroiliac joint. I was thinking, oh, it feels a bit sore, a bit stiff. And on the Monday, you know, my first day off after teaching, I thought, okay, I need to, you know, my body's telling me to relax, you know, I need to chill. So I did. And then the next day I went back to work. I remember doing some heavy deadlifts. And halfway through a set, I thought my right knee really hurts. And I thought, okay, I'm going to listen to my body and I'm going to stop training, even though I'd literally just started. My body's telling me, no, don't carry on. So I finished my workout, didn't think much of it. Went home, went to bed, woke up the next day. Woke up and I thought, oh, my back's really sore. I thought, this is interesting. So I tried to get out of bed and I couldn't move. And I thought, oh, this is not good. So my training kicked in and I thought, okay, my left leg is numb. And I can feel exactly where it's numb. Mm-hmm. It's on the L4 and L5 dermatomes, which suggests that the nerves coming out of L4 and L5 are probably entrapped somewhere, probably by the discs. So I thought, okay, well, I know how to centralize a disc. So I kind of rolled out of bed, got on the floor, did some mobilizations, managed to gradually stand up, did some more mobilizations against the wall. And I thought, that hasn't made a blind bit of difference. I thought, this is actually more serious than I originally thought. And then, again, I was kind of sensing what's going on in my body. My whole left leg was numb, right down to my toes. I couldn't lift my toes up. I couldn't dorsiflex the ankle.
Wow.
And I thought, I've done something serious here. Now, the interesting thing was, leading up to that point, I was spending about 12, 14 hours a day writing a book. Now, I wouldn't normally spend that long seated. And, you know, sitting's not a good thing for your back. I was also doing Bikram yoga at least once a week, but some weeks every day, where you're obviously doing extreme movements under, you know, really hot conditions.
Overdoing it.
Yeah. And so the interesting thing was, in 4 weeks' time from the day I woke up with this back pain, I was due to have a meeting in California to discuss the book with the publishers. And I couldn't change the date. It had to be on that date. So I'm like, okay, I'm in trouble here. And, you know, I was pretty convinced I had an L4, L5, L5S1 disc bulges, both two levels because of my symptoms. But I thought the other thing is, there's a condition called cauda equina, which requires immediate medical attention, i.e. surgery.
Oh.
And I thought, I just need to get this checked. So I rang the doctors and said, look, I want to just check. I haven't got a cauda equina. Can I get a referral for an MRI? Now, obviously, I'm feeling embarrassed because, you know, as a lumbar spine, you know, specialist, I've gone and done the very thing that I teach my clients not to do. But anyway, I turn up at the doctor's. I had to go on the bus because I couldn't sit. So I couldn't drive. I couldn't get in a taxi. I stood on the handicap space on the bus, ironically. And I get to my GP and I walk in and I explained to him what I do for a living. And I explained to him what I thought it was. And that I just wanted a referral to get an MRI just to make sure it wasn't really serious and required surgery, immediate surgery, like within 24 hours.
Ooh.
And the first thing he said was, "Oh, you know a lot about this, don't you?" Which I wasn't surprised. And he said, "Oh, just pop your top off for a moment. I want to have a look at something." And I thought, you're not going to see anything. Anyway, so he ran his finger down my spine. He says, "Yeah, I don't really see much that's going on, but you're obviously in a lot of pain," because I couldn't sit down. He said, "I'll write you a prescription for anti-inflammatories and some painkillers." I said, "No, don't bother, because I won't use them." And he's like, "What do you mean?" And I said, "Well, if I'm in pain, the pain's telling me what movements not to do so that I don't make the pain worse, right?" And he's like, no, you have to take them. And I'm like, "No, I don't have to take them." I said, "This is what I do for a living." I said, "If I'm causing myself more damage, I want to feel it, because that's going to teach me what positions I can and can't get into, right?" So he said, "Look, as your doctor, I have to write you the prescription." I said, "Okay, that's fine. That's not a problem." And he said, "Just one thing." He said, "You told me that you're going to fly in 4 weeks' time." I said, "Yeah." He said, "You cannot fly." He said, "I'm going to stipulate you definitely cannot fly." I said, "I'm flying." And he's like, "No, you're not." And I said, "Yes, I am." And it went backwards and forwards. And then he said, "Look, as your doctor, I'm telling you not to fly." And I said, "As your patient, I will be flying." So as soon as I got out of the doctor's surgery, I just saw the nearest bin and put the prescription in the bin, because I knew I wasn't going to, you know, I knew I wasn't going to take any medication. But what happened was, I got an MRI and I had ruptured my L4-5 pretty badly and my L5-S1 reasonably badly. So I couldn't walk. I couldn't do anything. And my fear was, my career's over. Like, if this doesn't get better, my career is over and I won't be able to go to the gym. I won't be able to play tennis, two of my passions in life. So anyway, I got to California. I don't know how. The first time I sat down was to get into the cab to go to the airport.
Oh my goodness.
I got on the plane and there was this old couple that was already sat, and I was to sit next to this old lady, and I've got my lumbar roll out and I'm kind of like, look like a, you know, disabled person trying to get into the chair. And these old couple were from Essex and they were lovely. And she's like, "Oh, are you all right, dear? Oh, can I help you?" You know, she was lovely. And that was literally, like, I didn't even know if I could sit on the plane. I was literally thinking, "Oh my God, what if I can't even sit on the plane? Or what if I'm halfway there and the pain's too bad?" But it turns out I was fine. So I get off the plane and I'm like, now I've got to drive. This was the first time in 4 weeks I had to drive. Luckily, of course, in America, all the hire cars are automatic, because if I'd have needed a clutch, no chance, because it's my left side. So anyway, cut long story short, the trip went okay. It was difficult getting in and out of cars, but the trip went okay. Got the book deal. That was all done. And then I went on a journey of 2 years. It took 2 years to rehabilitate. So disc injuries, because discs have very little blood supply, they take a long time to heal. But luckily, I knew exactly what I was doing. So, you know, what I did from a physical point of view is that I knew which muscles were tight in my body. I know which ones I had to stretch. I knew which muscles had weakened. So I knew which muscles I had to strengthen. My diet was already very good, so I just continued with that. But the one thing, hydration was already good. But again, discs are mainly water, so you've got to really make sure you hydrate really well. Mm. But the one thing that, and again, I spoke to Paul Cech about the injury, and of course he's very woo-woo. And he said to me, but you know what your lesson is from the pain. And it's what he calls the pain teacher. So whenever we get pain, it's our subconscious mind trying to make our conscious mind aware of something that we need to be aware of. So what he said to me is, he said, you know what it is, don't you? And I'm like, what? He says, you've been working too hard. Well, the funny thing was, I was working too hard writing a book for his institute. But the moral of the story was, it was a lesson to me to not work so hard and to look after myself and to get adequate rest, because that's what I wasn't doing. So I was really making sure that I was getting enough rest, getting to sleep on time, and being patient. So when you've got an injury like a disc injury, I mean, I've had so many muscular injuries over the years. I've been playing sport competitively since I was six. And they heal really quickly. Discs take a long time. You can go from week to week to week and it doesn't feel any different. And you just feel like you're not getting any progress. So it was also a lesson in patience and just trusting the process that I'd seen work with other people. But when it's your own body, it's like, oh my God, but is it going to work this time? And what I would say is, I learned more having that injury than I did with all the training that I've received. You know, simple things like, okay, if you've got a disc bulge, how do you put socks on? Right? How do you put shoes on? How do you put your underwear on? Right? But now I can teach people exactly how to do it. Whereas before, I would have been a little bit like, oh, yeah, I'm not exactly sure how to do it. Right? So the process that I went through is what we call the hero's journey. So you go through the pain. You learn how to overcome the pain, and then you teach other people how to do the same thing.
There you go.
So it was a mixture of, you know, very technical, academic, right brain information coupled with the woo-woo.
Right, which is what everybody needs, even if they're not aware Absolutely. That they need it, right?
And another thing that's really important when anyone's in pain is to understand, why do they want to get out of pain? How are they going to be different when they haven't got pain? So, you know, for me, the first thing I was thinking was not what my goal is, but what the nightmare is. The nightmare is that I couldn't continue working. At that time, 80 to 90% of my work was either on the gym floor or in the treatment room. So, you know, if you're, you know, crippled as I was temporarily, that's gone.
What are you gonna do?
80 to 90% of my income is gone. So that was one nightmare. And as I said before, you know, working out and playing tennis and being active, you know, that's my identity. That's who I am. Right. So to lose that was my nightmare. But my dream was to get back to playing tennis. It was get back to being able to lift heavy weights in the gym. It was to get back to being able to help people on the gym floor and giving them manual therapy. That was my dream. So, you know, what I try and teach people that come to me in pain is, okay, so when you've got what it is that you do want, i.e. a functioning pain-free body, what's that going to bring you? How are you going to benefit from that? How is it going to make your life better? You know, people say things like, well, I can play with my kids, or I can get back to running, or, you know, I can do my job better, or whatever it might be.
Too vague.
Right. But you need a goal. If you just think, oh, I want to get out of pain, it makes the job a lot harder. You've got to understand, okay, what is it you want to achieve and why do you want to achieve it? Right. Because that then gives you your motivation and your focus to do it. So every day I was waking up thinking, the pain feels the same as it did last week. Is this ever going to get any better? But what I'd focus on is the outcome. Okay, right. But one day I will be back in the gym and I will be lifting heavy and I will be running around a tennis court chasing after a green fluffy ball, right?
Yeah, and without that, the doubt that you were starting to have would have taken over.
Absolutely.
And that story would have got bigger and bigger, which is what tends to happen with so many people, because they didn't have what you just said there, that their bigger why, the specific reason, not the superficial reason of getting better, but the real what's important to them as to why they want to improve. Yeah, I can see how that is, it's just super important for anybody.
And it goes further than that. So when you take someone that's in pain and they're what we call catastrophizing, oh, I'm never going to get any better. What that does, it actually sends a signal from the brain down the spinal cord, and it actually blocks inhibition of pain. So what it does is, and there's other mechanisms that I'll come onto in a moment, but what happens is, so let's say, for instance, we're talking about disc injury like I had. Well, if you're catastrophizing about it, the disc can actually heal, but the body can keep sending pain signals to the brain from that area. So the area is healed, but your brain is still getting messages saying, but that area is still damaged. So you're still in pain. Now, if you're catastrophizing, it stops the inhibition of the pain. So you can be completely healed, but you can still have pain.
And I bet that happens so much because people tend to identify as a person with the back, you know, it becomes Absolutely. Their whole identity rather than that's just a part, it's just a transition you're going Absolutely. Through. Fascinating.
And there are other, so the thing that I just mentioned about the catastrophizing and the nerve impulses coming from the brain down the spinal cord, they can go in the other direction as well. And this is called central sensitization. So when there are too many inputs going into the nervous system, as well as pain, what happens is the pain continues. So, you know, one example is, let's say, for instance, someone is eating foods that their immune system is responding to, what we call a food sensitivity. That causes inflammation. That creates more input into the nervous system. That's a type of central sensitization. So again, the discs in my example could heal, but the pain continues. So, you know, think about it. How long does it take for any tissue in the body to regenerate? Well, I believe the latest science is saying every 2 years, every cell in your body has regenerated, right? So how can you have back pain for more than 2 years if none of the cells are still there when the initial injury happened, right? So what's causing the pain? Well, one of the things is the central sensitization. That's a potential. But there's something else that I see a lot. And sometimes I have to be careful how I communicate this with clients, because sometimes they feel I'm kind of having a pop at them for saying this. So I have to be really careful with the language. But, and this isn't just injuries. This can also be for any illness. So I don't know if you're familiar with Bruce Lipton's work.
Yeah.
So, you know, what Bruce Lipton teaches in his book, The Biology of Belief, is that, you know, for the first 7 years of life, our brainwave states are very, very slow. So delta, so the first 2 years of life, our brainwave state is only delta, which is really slow. And then from 2 to 7, we have delta and theta. So delta in an adult is deep sleep. Theta in an adult is like that's like the rapid eye movement sleep, like when we're dreaming. And also, you know, when you're just going off to sleep or you're just waking up, that's the theta state. But like right now, you know, we're probably in an alpha state, so our vibrations of the brain is much faster. Well, the first 7 years of life, when a child is in delta and theta, that's a hypnotic trance state. So what happens the first 7 years of your life, whatever environment you're in, your subconscious mind just absorbs it. From the age of 7 on, because you've got a higher frequency of brainwave states, you've got the ability to question what's coming in. Okay. So what we see quite often is that if, and this is most people when you think about it, if at some point in the first 7 years of life you were ever sick, what tends to happen most of the time is that your mum has to take the day off work and they have to look after you. And what do? They give you lots of love and attention. So your subconscious mind says, the way that I get love is by not being well, because I get all the attention, I get all the love. So if someone doesn't love themselves enough, what can happen is at a subconscious level, their behaviors can drive them into illness or pain.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what can happen is say, for instance, someone came to me and they said, look, I've got lower back pain. What can I do? I said, okay, fine. Let's get you in. Let's do a, you know, detailed physical assessment on you. What I'll do is I'll assess your body. I'll find out which muscles are weak. I'll give you some strengthening exercises for those. We'll find out what muscles aren't working properly. I'll teach you how to get those firing again. Which muscles are tight? I'll give you stretches for those. Which joints are restricted? I'll give you mobilizations for those. We'll look at your diet. We'll look at your sleep patterns and all these things. And they'll be like, oh yeah, great. So I'll give them a holistic program. They've got very detailed program to follow step by step. And first 2 months, they're doing great. You know, their pain's getting better and better. And then they get to month three and all of a sudden they stop doing everything. And it's like, ooh, why have they stopped? They were getting good results. Why would they stop? Mm. Well, what can happen is that the subconscious can kick in and say, well, hang on a minute. If you get better, you're not going to receive any love from anyone. Because, you know, what we know is that about 95 to 99% of the time, it's our subconscious mind that runs our behaviors.
The whole lot, all day, every day.
So, if you think about it, you know, a few times a year, I go on long drives on the motorway, it takes 3.5-4 hours. I get to the other end and I think, I don't even remember driving. Right. I might remember listening to the radio or music or whatever. I don't actually even remember driving. I don't remember changing gear, hitting the brake, hitting the accelerator. It's because my subconscious mind knows how to drive. My conscious mind can just switch off from driving. Right. So what can often happen is we have automatic reactions to certain situations and our behaviors occur before our conscious mind has even considered the situation. So in some situations, what some people have to do is address what's going on at the subconscious level. And you could call that the woo-woo level, right? Because again, you can't measure it. But what you can do is you can deal with it and you can see the results that happen afterwards. And there's lots of different ways in which you can address the subconscious mind. So it might be hypnosis is a really good way. So remember, the first 7 years of life, you're in a hypnotic trance anyway. And that's how the behaviors get hardwired into your nervous system. Well, what you can do is with hypnosis is you can get someone to get you into that hypnotic state and use suggestive language to override those subconscious behaviors. So that's just one example, but things like art therapy can work really well.
It's a nice cheat sheet, isn't it? It's a back way in. But also, I suppose, staying in the moment, staying present, being conscious, because like you say, the majority of people, if they're going to the same place of work every single day, I would go out on a limb and say 95% of them are driving totally on autopilot. And like you say, you can think you can be listening to some music or having a, hands-free, of course, having a conversation. And yeah, you're right. You're doing this all on autopilot. And if that's serving you, I suppose, if your life's brilliant and you've got no injuries and you've got no illness and everything's going brilliant, keep going. Autopilot's great. Mm. But for many, it might not be so, right?
Absolutely. And I think just going back to a point I said earlier, whenever we're in pain, I think it's important to try and understand what the lesson is. You know, and I think it's in the Hindu religion. That's exactly what they do anyway, right? So when you've got a negative situation in life, rather than look at it and catastrophize, look at it and say, what am I meant to learn from this experience? Because, you know, if you look back at your life and you say, would you take away all of your negative experiences? Well, if you would, who would you be today?
Yeah.
Right? Because we learn from our mistakes. Now, I've learned a lot in life, which probably means I've made a lot of mistakes. Right?
That's right. If you've not made many mistakes, you need to start trying a little bit harder.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, if you've not made many mistakes, you probably haven't achieved much.
No. Very true. Very true. I love it. Do you know, I actually didn't realise that the Czech stuff was actually that woo-woo. I knew it was all, my experience of it was many, many years ago when you'd hear people dissing it because it's controversial. And you used to think, look, for crying out loud.
Which is all accepted as facts now, by the way.
All, totally. And it was totally, it just made sense. You know, if you're doing certain things in your day-to-day life or as children when you're climbing things and doing things, you're getting your body in certain positions. Why would it be unsafe? Like, come on. I mean, you know, we used to teach squats so badly. You know, in my day when we're teaching, it was, you know, you totally were in the wrong position to do a proper squat. But, you know, I get it. In some ways it's come about because the fear, because it's coming from a state of fear of causing injury. But actually it wasn't really prepping people for normal life or exercise afterwards. So actually it was having the opposite effect and causing more injury. Absolutely. Because they weren't prepped.
Absolutely.
I mean, yeah. The whole thing was crazy.
It's interesting as well. Again, you know, I spoke about Paul Cech being the person to, you know, make things like the Swiss ball and functional training and cable machines common. You know, they're commonplace nowadays. Well, I went on a course with Paul in 2004, and it was all about the cervical spine, the cranium, and, you know, real technical areas of the body. And I was, you know, a real nerd, and I couldn't wait to get on this course. And the first 2 days we were talking about spirituality, and I'm thinking, what is going on here? Like, you know, it was my first kind of experience of that kind of thing. I was, you know, I mean, I grew up with parents that are, you know, fundamental atheists, right? So, you know, I'm sitting there thinking, he's talking about Jesus, and I'm thinking, what is he going on about? But in the back of my mind, I was thinking, yeah, but everything he's taught me so far has worked. So just have an open mind. I could have easily have switched off, like a lot of people do actually, when Paul talks about these kind of things. And then another course in 2006, the first time I ever heard the words shamanism and plant medicines. But by then I'd known Paul enough to think, okay, if he's telling me this stuff, I need to listen, right? Well, you look now, you know, you listen to someone like Joe Rogan on his podcast, he talks about shamanism and plant medicines and spirituality all the time. It's become mainstream. So, you know, over, I don't know how many decades, you know, Paul has been a little bit of a pioneer in lots of different areas.
Totally ahead of the game.
And it's quite interesting, you know, I sometimes see people that have done some of the Czech training over the years, and they're kind of criticizing the direction that Paul's gone in recently. So they liked the early stuff, but they don't really like the direction he's gone into. But, you know, someone that's been taught by Paul and applied what he's learned, for me, the combination of the really kind of left brain technical stuff and the woo-woo right brain stuff, when you bring that together, it's just so effective and powerful. And I just couldn't do without it now. You know, I feel like I wouldn't be able to help people with all that information. And I'm sure I could on one side or the other, I could help people, but I'd feel like I'm a two-legged stool if I could only use one or the other, you know?
Well, again, I mean, I always sort of use the phrase, I was told a very long time ago, you know, sell them what they want and then give them what they need. So Sometimes by mentioning certain things could put people off. And this is why I suppose this whole show came about, you know, just a sprinkling of woo-woo. Well, you know, what's tended to happen, it's actually ended up being all woo-woo. But that might have put people off.
Mm.
Because they are very much there. So having that just to try and drip feed them little bits, and then if they were to try things out, because like you said earlier about it really is, you know, try it and see, and you will be your own proof, because you're only going to know and have a real inner knowing through that, through the actual experience of your own, how you've changed, how you've improved, how you've healed. And then you'll know what it was down to. And I suppose that's the only way any of us learn, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Even if we told something, I'm not very good. And you mentioned that really early on about in work, you know, I don't really react to being told what to do very well. Again, that's my ego, and I'll admit it. It's resistance. And it's funny, isn't it? It's with the work that you're doing, it's interesting that the physical side, for strengthen, you need resistance. Whereas with what's going on up here, actually the opposite is true.
Yeah, you need
you've
to
got
let go.
To release the resistance. Yeah. I find that absolutely fascinating when we're talking about the, you know, the two even, different parts.
But even with strength, so if we're talking about strength of a muscle, let's say, yeah, you need to work it, but it only repairs when you rest. When you let go.
Yes, very good point, actually. And I suppose, yes, too many people focus on, yes, you are thinking resistance, but yes, the actual growth of the muscle happens when you're sleeping. Everything happens in that. Isn't that funny? So when our brain is not in that, and again, it's when it is the ego, it's we've been conditioned throughout life with everything that we see, read, you know, if it isn't this stuff, is all being linked to the ego and the mind. Whereas now we're having this understanding that everything actually up to have optimum health, to have in all aspects, whether that's physical health, relationships, you know, fine, whatever, it's the opposite that needs to be worked on. And for me, that's been a, you know, I still haven't got it. I have more of an understanding of it. Because I have been totally focused on the mind and the learning and the ego side of it, I suppose, rather than having that understanding of, like you said, very early on about sometimes, you know, you have got to listen to your body and rest and actually calm and maybe stop that chitter chatter so that the answers that you need actually come to the surface. And I had a very similar experience myself not so long ago. So I get it. I wish I'd got it a few decades ago.
Don't we all? I often get clients saying to me, I wish I'd met you 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have gone through all this pain.
Yeah, but 20 years ago, you might have not had the whole complete package.
Exactly. And I say to them, but you were meant to go through that pain.
Yeah. It was all there in the right time. Absolutely. Now you can help so many. So, yeah, well, I mean, I could talk to you for hours, actually, but we're running out of time. So for the listeners out there, how do you go about helping people? What do you specifically do? How do you help them? And how can people get in touch with you?
So, I mean, there's a lot of people, lots of different types of people I can help. Obviously, I've been studying a lot of things for a long time. So I do injury rehabilitation. So obviously lower back is the most common thing that I see, but it's the most common thing that's out there. But I work with people with all kinds of conditions. So gastrointestinal problems. So, you know, things like bloating, constipation, diarrhea, you know, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth is a really big thing that I see at the moment. I work with people with skin conditions, so acne, eczema, psoriasis. I suffered with severe acne myself for 18 years. So it's a subject that's kind of quite close to my heart. And it's an area that doctors, again, do not have any idea what to do with.
Do they know anything about gut health?
Not really.
I shouldn't say that, but they don't seem to.
No, not really. You know, people that have things like any kind of hormonal kind of issues, so, you know, menstrual irregularities, infertility, the menopause, andropause type symptoms. So,
cover a massive area.
Yeah, there is quite a wide area. I mean, that's the thing about the Czech training. We do go through so much training that you can help almost anybody. But they're the kind of most common types of people that I work with. If people want to contact me, probably the best place is my website, which is www.bodycheck.co.uk, and it's spelled bodycheck.co.uk. From there, anyone can request a complimentary consultation. So that's done on Zoom. Happy to do that for anybody. There's no, you know, you don't have to buy anything. If you do want to have coaching with me, that's fantastic as well. But if you don't, that's fine too. I'm on all the, you know, the kind of main social media channels, pretty much. I'm not on some of the younger ones, TikTok and whatever Snapchat. No, not on any of those. So Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. And obviously I've got my new podcast coming out, hopefully September.
Awesome.
So it'll be September 2022. So that will be www.radicalhealthrebel.com.
Brilliant. Brilliant. And so, and what, so you're just going to be covering all, I think I have a slight idea, probably again, controversial to some.
Yes. Well, yes and no. Yes and no. I mean, the goal of the podcast will be to help people. That's the main goal. So the goal is to help people lead a healthier, more productive, fulfilling and happy life. That's really what it's all about. But I've got half a dozen or so guests already lined up. One's going to be talking about healing from trauma. One's going to be on cancer. I've got another one. What's he going to be talking about? I can't remember. One guy in Scotland who's been running a gym for a while, talking about, you know, how his members have, you know, because he's got amazing results with his members. So we're talking about, you know, what he's done there. And I've got all kinds of people. So Paul Check will be coming on at some point.
Brilliant.
I've got another guy coming on to talk about pain, which is kind of what we spoke about today. But I've got lots. I mean, acne, probably it's going to be lots about acne, lots about pain. And just
It's needed. I mean, look, absolutely. I'm not, I know some people think I'm giving them a hard time. I'm not. I mean, I'm not. We know that our system is not working as it should. It's not everybody's fault. It's the ones above the rules and regulations are filtering down. I'm sure every single doctor on the planet goes into it like you, like me. Yeah. With the goal in mind to actually help people. It's just that sometimes we can get
when doctors are often told things like, you know, if they take a statin drug, it will reduce the risk of heart attacks by 50%. And then you look at the research and it's not 50% at all. It's 0.5%.
It's crazy.
And doctors haven't got the time to go away and look at the actual research themselves.
Well, and also it will just take so much time for things to change. The guy that I studied under was Professor Tim Noakes, and he was taken to court. He had to fight for his license for 4.5 years for giving a nursing mother, advice to wean the baby off onto a high fat, low carb diet, which is what breast milk is. Go figure. Rather than giving advice to put them on rice, you know, all this stuff that's just sugar. I mean, just the whole thing. But because it's almost like, I don't know if you are in the UK and you're driving around, especially, I can only talk about London because that's where I am. But, you know, there's roadworks everywhere and they're doing the water, and it does make me cringe a little bit because they're... A lot of the places around me seem to be replacing old lead pipes with these plastic ones. And you're like, should that not have been done 100 years ago? Mm. Like lead, hello. Things take a long time to change. So with regards to our whole health, maybe, just maybe, some of the things that we were brought up thinking that were healthy for us may not.
Like asbestos.
I mean, you just...
Like tap water. Like white bread. I could be here all day.
We could go on. You could...
Mercury in your fillings.
The whole thing.
The radiation coming off your mobile phone.
I do have a bit of protection.
Yeah, I do. I've got protection everywhere against that kind of stuff. It's all over the place.
I mean, it's not. And the trouble is we get called a little bit wacky, but it's, you know, if we think about it, really, just think about it. You don't have to be a scientist. Look, like Lee is so overqualified. But to listen to that, you don't have to be, so much, you know, so backed by science to just think critically, which seems to be something that...
Well, thinking critically now is a radical act, isn't it?
Yeah, we're not.
Right? And you have to be a rebel to think critically, right?
And that's the thing. We should all be taught to just question. You know, we're not saying that we've got everything figured out and it's all right. It's all questioning, just learning to question. Is this right for me? And does this make sense? You know, water coming out of a lead pipe with fluoride and God knows what other.
When I teach courses for the Czech Institute, the first thing we say is don't believe a word that we say.
Ah, love that.
Right. Go away, try what we've taught you and come back and tell us whether it works or not. And if it doesn't, then either you haven't applied it properly or we need to learn something.
And that's got to be the whole thing. Like for instance, you know, for me, you know, I would continually go pay, obviously, to have my spine manipulated quite forcefully. Whereas learning something that was really simple to lie on my back, that was very, very gentle, work with my body, and actually the less movement or the less energy put into it, actually the better, interestingly enough, isn't it?
Yeah,
quite often overcomplicate so much because of the ego mind. And actually, quite often, it's the taking things off and actually keeping it really, really like ultra simple tends to be the things that I've personally found that what has always worked for me. I mean, like you know, when you're talking about the mind as well as at the physical, we know that. You know, what, at the end of the day, what is meditation? It's taking things off, isn't it? Not trying to think of things and remember things, actually.
Again, we talk a lot about the complexity-simplicity curve. And what that means is when we go through our training, things get more and more complex as you go through the training. Then you get to the point where your head's bursting. But then what you do is once you start coaching clients, you start simplifying what you learn.
Right.
And if you think about it, if you've learned something really well, you should be able to explain it to an eight-year-old. So, you know, when I'm working with clients, I might have a million things in my head, but I might need to only tell my client three of those things.
Yes. They don't need to know the science behind it.
Absolutely. Right. So whilst things are very complex, to get results, you have to keep them simple.
Oh, yeah. Every day, all day long, with every subject, I think it's funny the difference. And I notice it in myself. You know, I know when my ego is taking over and I have to check myself, have a little bit of a word with myself.
As I would say, body check yourself before you wreck
yourself. Body check yourself. Love that. Have a little word. Karen, that's just a bruised ego. Girl, I'll chill out, relax. It's all a journey. It's all a journey, right? Never stop learning.
Oh,
never stop learning.
I mean, I'm 53 and I'm still, my fire is still burning to learn more and more and more stuff. I just can't,
rightly so. Again, I do think it's sad when people did stop learning when they left school. But again, it's because they were forced into maybe learning the things that they have got no interest in. Mm. When it's something that you're passionate about and that you've got this thirst for knowledge. We should all have a continual thirst for knowledge, because if we're not learning and growing, we're not staying the same, that's for sure. So yeah, there's absolutely only one way we're going, right?
Absolutely. We all go back to the same place.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's definitely woo-woo there.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, it is quite interesting that people have, you know, I do hope that, I think, you know, people are coming to the realization that, yeah, actually there's more to this. You know, just like you say, I love that sort of explanation that the woo is just stuff that we don't have to know it all. Again, that's the ego. We don't have to know it all. Mm. Trust, have faith in the unknown. It's not necessarily a scary place. But again, we've been conditioned to, oh, that's not so. Well, our subconscious is telling you, oh, that's unsafe. Don't go there. We don't know. But love it. So thank you so much for your time, Lee. Absolutely fascinating. I didn't realize. I thought this was going to actually be more physical because we haven't really done so much physical stuff. And I was thinking, oh, Lee would be perfect to come on and be more physical. But you've surprised me in a nice way that actually it's, yes, very physical.
I can always come back and do more physical.
Would love to. I'd love to have you back. So thank you.
My pleasure.
So much for your time again, and to all the listeners. Well, you
Thanks
know
for having
that
me.
I will be back next week with Coffee with Karen. Bye for now.
Welcome to the Coffee with Karen podcast, a weekly chat show discussing everything from holistic health to current affairs from a mental, physical, and spiritual perspective. Get your weekly cup of positivity with a sprinkling of